Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi listeners, welcome to this week's episode of TED Talks. So today we have a celeb extravaganza and something that's definitely going to brighten up what can only be described here in London as a bit of a grey day. I have the lovely Ed Dyson.
Hi.
Hi Ed.
Thank you for having me.
No problems at all. So we have got today a bit of a treat. So slightly different to what we normally talk about, we're just going to talk about things I bloody love, which is all things celeb. So we're joined by what can only be described as one of the showbiz industry's journalist kind of, I'd say, connoisseurs. I was going to use the word king.
I've never been called that before.
I would say you're definitely a connoisseur, and I loved reading through your bio / CV, and it's one of those moments I often have whenever I have a guest on the show, and I think, what the fuck have I done with my life? Like, that person's achieved so much.
I've achieved nothing.
I feel like you've achieved everything. So you started off fresh out of uni and went straight to work for some very, very big names. To The Sun, we had The Daily Star.
Jumped in at the deep end.
You really did. So tell me a bit about it. Tell our guests exactly what that was like.
Well, it was weird because I moved down to London and I was just like a lot of my friends who did the journalism course in Sheffield. We came down with no job and we had to do like unpaid internships like a lot of people do in a lot of industries. And so me and my friend, Annabelle, who went to uni together, we were sharing a room to the point where we divided it with a screen and slept on either side, had
wow.
no money, were both working unpaid for magazines. And then I applied for a job at an agency called Bang Showbiz, and they took me on. Again, the pay wasn't very big, but they sent the reporters out to like big events like premieres and album launches, award ceremonies, to interview celebrities. And then what the agency would do is take those interviews and place them in the national papers. And it wasn't what I intended to do straight away. I thought I was going to be more of a feature writer. But I found I was quite good at it, and I found myself very starstruck and excited. And, like, one of my first jobs, I met Sarah Jessica Parker, and I was like, oh, my God, I can't believe,
dreams.
I can't believe she knows I exist. I did for, like, a second. So I was running around London squealing, just really excited. And then one of the papers, I think they, now that I've been doing it for a long time, newspapers like Young Enthusiastic Journalists, which me and a lot of my colleagues now no longer are. That's why. But at the time, I now see, looking back, why I was appealing to them, because they want people who want to go out. Because once you've done it for a few years, you start to kind of want to stay in a little
yes.
bit more.
That's what I'm always really intrigued by, because, I mean, I think anybody that's ever been out with me knows that I can party with them kids. I mean, I'm broken for 2 or 3 days after.
I mean, you're drinking wine now.
I mean, so, I know, it's the middle of the afternoon and I'm actually on a booze freeze. Yeah, but I always think it's those kind of careers really, I really admire them, because it's not just the work that you do, but it's exhausting actually, like having a real high energy, being like somebody that people want to come up and talk to at a party, which is most people's like biggest fear.
Well, I mean, mostly you're, in this job, you would be approaching the celebrity. It's very rare that a celebrity comes and approaches you. So you kind of, but yeah, you have to present yourself as
it's
someone
like holding
who they
a conversation.
To. Yeah,
exactly. And I think even if you're approaching somebody, it's always that thing is like, who is this person? Like, who is she? Like, do I want to speak to them?
Well, my tip for anyone who wants to be a showbiz journalist or has to interview a celebrity at a party. Celebrities meet so many different people on a day-to-day basis that they don't remember anyone, including the people that they do know. So if you go to a celebrity party, don't introduce yourself. Just talk to them as if you've already met them, and they will assume
that because they don't want to seem like they don't know who you are and they seem rude.
Absolutely. So if you just go up to, I don't know, Ollie Murs, I'm like, Ollie, oh my God, it's so nice to see you again. He'll be like, oh, hi, how are you? He won't say, I've never met you before, because he knows that he meets so many people that he has forgotten. So he'll just be polite, that's what they all do. And then next thing you know, you're interviewing him and he's...
Such a good tip. Because I always get the fear. I mean, I always get that as soon as I come in the room with them or I know it's my turn to speak, I'm always a little bit nervous. I still get that kind of butterflies in my stomach because I'm not seasoned as you are. But that's a really good tip.
Well, one thing to remember, and I didn't realise this for years actually, is, and it's a good thing to think in your head before you speak to a celebrity at a party or during an interview, the person who should be nervous is them. Because the worst thing that can happen to you, unless it's a big interview that's important for your career, is that you don't get a story. For them, the worst thing that can happen is massive. If they say the wrong thing in an interview with you, it can ruin their career. It happens all the time. So the person who should be nervous is the celebrity.
And that's a really weird thought.
You're the one with the power, even though it doesn't seem that way.
God, what a terrifying life. So basically every single time somebody approaches a celebrity, they have to think about what they're saying.
Well, they don't, and that's why that's why they cause so much shit for themselves. Especially when they've just become famous. That first year, I notice this a lot with X-Factor contestants because they don't get enough time because they're thrust into the limelight to properly be trained. They will say stuff and they'll inevitably fuck. Am I allowed to swear?
You can swear. You can swear away.
They can inevitably fuck up, and then they learn what they on the job what they should and shouldn't say. And journalists often, myself included in the past, kind of take advantage of that naivety.
That's what I wanted to ask you. It's like into the nitty gritty. Is there like a bit of a like cheeky side of you? And to me, I just think it's basically clever commercial sense where you do want to take advantage of that. Because obviously the whole point is to get the scoop and to get the story. And no one wants to listen to dry chat.
Absolutely. And I think...
That's what Tinder's for, basically.
Especially when I worked at the Sun or the Star, you're in such a pressure to produce exclusive content and to have those big stories that you get so focused on that you kind of do start to forget that they are people. And now,
really?
Now I've been doing it longer, I don't do that. And there have been times now in recent years where there's been a story I'm like, you know what, I don't think you meant to say that, I'm gonna let that one go. And now,
because you've got a heart.
Yeah, but there have been times in the past where I didn't, if they said something, if they slipped up, I thought, right, I know what, I can twist that, I can do this. Never anything life destroying, but sometimes, I mean, it's just silly things like you'll just ask them about another celebrity and what their opinion is.
Well, like Mariah today. Have you been listening about recently when Mariah Carey apparently was asked, do you know J-Lo? And
I don't know
she
her.
Was like, yeah.
Yeah, that's her like famous phrase. Like, she said it a few times. Well, Mariah intends to be shady. But a lot of the time they are speaking about another celebrity and they won't say anything too bad. But in print, everything looks worse.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. And I think even today where... I mean, not very many people, I'd say, read print how we used to. Like, I think when we were younger, when you were definitely starting out in your career, the only way you got your celebrity gossip was through, like, Heat magazine.
Yeah.
Like, reading the 3 a.m. Girls column. Yeah, like, going to those tabloids where they had the real juiciest celebrity gossip. Mm-hmm. And it became, like, a real art, the way that celebrity journalists interview. And actually, I've got quite a few friends that are celebrity journalists randomly. And I always feel like it's like the art of journalism that is still true journalism.
Yeah.
Because you still have to curate your story in the same way. And I'm just really fascinated about how you go in and you get the scoop and how you then turn that into, whether it's like getting the quotes and sending them on or building the buzz or the scoop, basically, the big feature that's going to get everyone going cray-cray.
So there's loads of different ways that you can end up breaking an exclusive story. So the most obvious one is just through an interview. So you interview a celebrity and then the best line, as they say in the newsroom, or the best quote, that's the story. But these days, more increasingly, they are more wary of the media, which... we have ourselves to blame for because we've kind of, like I said, messed them around enough. So that tends to be a bit harder. But then you get a lot of stories from contacts, from sources. So a lot of time I know people will be reading.
So who are these sources? Because I always feel like a secret source. I mean, I bloody love Grazia magazine and it is my favourite magazine. It's the perfect combination of fashion and celebrity gossip.
Yeah.
But it's always like a source close to Jennifer Aniston said. Are these like friends? Are they random drunken people you see that witness things?
They come from a million different places. So they, I mean, there's really extreme examples. Sometimes it's come from the celebrity themselves.
Seriously?
Yeah, so like when I was at The Sun, Lindsay Lohan, she used to sell stories about herself through her team to The Sun.
Doesn't surprise me.
Katie Price is someone who would do that.
Oh no, I really like Katie Price. She's one of them that people love to hate, but I'm rooting for her.
But she plays the game. She really does. Yeah,
but at least she plays it into me. Like, the reason why I like Katie Price, which everyone's going to be like, Teb, loads of the drop off rate just plummeted.
Deb has been cancelled.
It's like, she's like a Kris Jenner to me. Sorry,
like if she's changing mogul. Her name.
Yeah, she's like, you can tell she's playing a game. She's not a lot of obvious talent. She obviously has some talent.
She's very honest, which I admire.
I like, exactly.
And she's good to interview. I once had to interview her in bed with her.
Stop.
So I think it was because she was so lazy. She tried to make out like it was a fun way to interview. It's like, bitch, you just can't be asked to get up. Let's just be honest. So I walk into a room and take her to the interview. She's in bed. I'm like, are you fucking kidding? So she's like, are you getting in? I was like, oh my God, I'm going to catch something. So I get into bed with her. And then because she's laying down horizontal and she's got those famously large fun bags, I can't see her face. I'm trying to like... lift
You're
my
wading
head.
Through the silicone.
Exactly. So I could make eye contact. She's like, excuse me, are you looking at my tits? I'm like, Katie, how can I not? It's either that or I hang my head out the window. So she's always interesting. She never gives a boring interview.
Do you think that's part of the act? Do you think she does that like for the drama?
I think she knows that her personal life and the drama in her personal life is her greatest commodity.
I mean, it's her brand really, isn't it? Without it that. Is.
So if she didn't get cheated on 2 years, she'd probably be more devastated than she was. Yeah. She's like, God, come so on, sad. We need something.
Screw me over.
Yeah.
So we've been on air for what, about 10 minutes now? Biggest celebrity scoop you've ever achieved?
Oh my God, I don't know.
That you feel is the biggest, because I think that it's quite personal when it's your work.
Yeah, something I was proud of was a kind of uncovered a drug scandal that happened at the BBC, and that came from an interview.
I wasn't expecting that.
It came from an interview that was from, what's his name, Alan Dedicote.
I'm nodding, pretending I know who that
he's
is.
He's not very well known, but you would know his voice, because he announces the lottery balls.
Yes, I know the voice.
And he also does the voice of Strictly.
Oh, he does another voice?
He's not Ex-Factor, yes,
oh,
Strictly.
Oh, it's another one, yeah.
So it's like, what do you announce on Strictly? Tonight we've got Anton. So it's him, and he gave an interview where he revealed that they used to have a drug dealer come to the offices at BBC headquarters, and they just hired their own drug dealer because it was so easy because so many of the staff were on coke, and he would go from desk to desk and they would pay him there and then.
Stop! It's like getting like a sandwich at your desk.
A sandwich and a line, yeah. So.
I mean, if ever, a sandwich and a line. Good Lord.
There's your title. So we're expected to get a line in the newsroom, as in an interview, but at the BBC, apparently they were getting a different kind of line. So he revealed that, and it made the front page of The Sun, which when I was at The Sun, obviously, any paper, every journalist is aiming to have the splash.
Yeah, so how does that work? Because you were at The Sun for quite a while, weren't you? And
2 years,
How do you get to be the front page? Like, is it like in, you know... I mean, the only reference I have for anything is like fashion or makeup, so forgive me. But is it like in fashion editorials where it can't be like a star that's picked, but it's something that's curated around whatever the big buzz is?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many different factors that come to play. So I often think a splash is kind of like an eclipse, and it's kind of like everything has together like like a perfect storm. So, I mean, ultimately the editor always makes the final decision, so... You can bring in a story, your line manager, the showbiz editor or news editor will love it. You can take it to conference, everyone in the room can love it.
Is that where they sit around the table and you all tell your scoop and the editor's like, yes, no, no, yes, no?
Yeah, it's like in The Apprentice.
Love it.
And often people end up getting fired in there, so it actually is like The Apprentice.
No way!
No, I've not seen someone fired in conference, but people were surely have walked out thinking, I think I just lost my job.
That's what I love about, I feel like, working in the type of media that you do, there's so much like adrenaline.
Mm-hmm.
It's so like instant and high impact. And that's why I think it's so like prevalent in today's culture, because I say the way we accumulate media stories, even for the big broadsheets, for the big bosses, and for those that are, you know, have the monopoly like the BBC, it's very much now about instant like gratification almost.
Oh, definitely, yeah. Like when I first started, there was if there was a big story, and it would be perhaps the front page of News of the World when I started, it would kind of, people would be satisfied with that one story for weeks. But now, with this 24/7 news agenda and everyone getting the news online, people want, they hear the story, like, oh, what is it, David Beckham's had an affair or something. Hypothetical.
This is just an example. This is not fact at all.
And then within 2 hours, people are loving it, but they're like, right, we want to know more. What's the next thing? And you just had to keep feeding this, like, ravenous appetite of the audience, because they, like, one story just, it's... Well, tomorrow it's yesterday's news. Yeah. And we want another story.
So on that, actually, I mean, I don't think I could interview a journo without asking them about their opinions on fake news.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how do you feel, especially in the genre of media that you're in, about the whole, like, fake news phenomenon and people, I mean, I say people, but I feel like species like Donald Trump who perpetuate fake news. And personally, for me, I feel as though they damage what is something that is quite exciting and what was very authentic,
mm-hmm.
And just make it really trashy and unreliable as a data source.
Yeah, I think that, I think it is good that the media itself is held to accountability, because I don't think you can be this system that is criticising the government, the public, like any important body in the country, but yourself be immune to, kind of owning up to responsibility when you make mistakes. And journalists do make mistakes and they have to apologize for them, and they are expected to be held accountable for that.
Have you ever had to apologize for anything?
I have, yeah. It was James Corden.
Oh god, tell me.
I wrote a story when I was the columnist at the Daily Star. I wrote a story about him.
I love James.
I don't like James.
Do you know what? Lots of people don't like James. I mean, I love James because I'm obsessed with
Gavin and Stacey. I like Gavin and Stacey, but it was also written by Ruth Jones, and I think I always found Smithy very annoying. And then I met him in an awards show, and he was rude, and I'd heard that he'd been rude to a few other journalists. He's very, on TV, he's very sycophantic and very like,
yeah.
Oh my god, Gary Barlow, I love you so much, and like seems like everyone's best friend.
He's basically an arsehole in real life.
But he's been rude to journalists, but then I don't necessarily think that means you're an arsehole. I can see why people are, but I logged it away, and then there was a story about him which was true. In fact, I shouldn't even repeat it, because this is why I had to apologize.
Okay, don't need to go into detail.
But there was a story and it was true, and he complained about it. And the thing is, as a journalist, when someone complains, it doesn't really matter if it's true or not, you have to have proof. And often it's very hard to prove things if they're not on tape, even if they did happen. Yeah. And this story wasn't, so we had to print our first apology to do with that.
Wow, so is that really hard?
I
can't say sorry. I'm notoriously bad at it, so I couldn't have a job where I had to actually publicly say sorry.
Well, I don't have to publicly say it. It's not like I'm stood in front of an audience, but they but they print it in the paper. And as far as the editor's concerned, having to print an apology is the last thing they ever want to do. So if you're the journalist responsible for them having to print an apology...
It's like such a fun thing to read, though.
I love reading them, because I'm like, it wasn't me. But when it's me, I'm like, oh, shit.
Have you ever had to interview him since?
I haven't seen him since, no.
I mean, he's in the States now, isn't he?
He is, and now he's really in hot water over this Harvey Weinstein thing.
Yeah, there's been a lot about that. Actually, over, I was listening to the High Low Show, which is a great podcast, and they did a big thing about that in their most recent episode. And I hate talking about conversations that are on other podcasts, but it's hard not to when you're a podcast, because you just spend your whole life listening to other podcasts.
Yeah.
but yeah, no, I kind of feel sorry for him in a way, because I feel like, why is he apologising? Why should he feel like he has to apologise for what I think is art?
Yeah, and I think sometimes with your apology, you justify the criticism you've got. In this case, I did think it was a bit ill-judged of him, because considering it's all just coming out, all these things about Weinstein, and these actresses who are accusing him of things are very present at the moment. But I do think, I don't like this culture of as soon as people are offended online, you automatically apologise.
Yeah, it's just,
like, actually, am I sorry?
I don't know. And actually...
For this.
You sometimes don't have to be sorry.
Yeah, it's
like,
fine.
Even sometimes...
Sorry, not sorry.
Yeah. And I think, as long as you're not physically hurting anybody... And I mean, I'll take that a little bit more, because I do think emotional hurt is also very, very painful and should be held accountable to apologies at times. But I think in, like, the media... I don't mean sort of journalist media. I mean more like film, TV, music. I feel like we almost dim down anybody's like artistic license and creative integrity by having to be so PC. And I'm really scared for what our entertainment is going to be in 10, 15 years' time if this is the culture that we're going to have to live in. I mean, if you have to apologise for every F word and... I mean, I agree, you should have to apologise for the C word, always. But, you know, there...
I haven't said that yet. Yeah.
Give him time. He's still only halfway through his glass of wine.
If I didn't say it about James Corden, I probably won't.
It's not going to come up. But yeah, I just feel like, if you, especially as a comedian, that's your craft, to make people
Absolutely.
Laugh. And
I think,
people do laugh at sad shit. I mean,
that's where humour comes from.
Exactly. You're trying to bring some kind of joy in something that's really bleak and is sometimes awful and devastating. And it may not be to everyone's taste, but you know what? That's what I think about a lot of people that walk past me every day in the streets.
And do you call abuse at them?
No! I just let it go.
But it's true, because it's not even just the entertainment. I think you close down the conversation.
Exactly.
People are too afraid. They think, I'm quite curious about trans, for example.
Yeah.
I want to know more about it, but if I ask, I know I'll use the wrong wording and I'll be shot down.
Oh,
so people
God,
just
totally.
Don't talk about it, and they're not learning.
And I can't... I mean, I think you've completely hit the nail on the head, especially when it comes to why we have conversations.
Yeah.
I think that conversations are completely... They're not even diluted anymore. They're completely censored.
Absolutely,
and I always find, often when I have guests on the show... you know, I always encourage people to speak as freely and openly as possible. And a lot of the times I'll do a recording with someone and it just won't go out because you haven't been open enough. And I think as long as you come from a good place and you're not being completely crass and, you know, offensive, which thankfully in my life, I don't think I know any people like that.
Yeah, but people get on Twitter and they just love... It's like mob mentality. It's
like
in the olden days when everyone had pitchforks and...
Yes!
Like, flames, but this is on Twitter. They love to destroy someone over a comment. It's like, you have to give people the chance to learn. Like, fair enough, say, oh, I think that this wasn't the right thing to say. Express your opinion, and maybe they'll be like, oh, actually, I see your point. But by just throwing shame and venom at them, I don't think that solves the problem.
No. I don't even think it's throwing... It's almost like throwing hatred at
that
problem, which is almost just as bad as...
And then you're a hypocrite.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So... Back to the scoop. Tell me, so other than my good friend James Corden, who I've still got to say, I do love a bit of GC.
Yeah.
JC even.
No, that's Gemma
GC.
Collins.
GC. Have you ever interviewed Gemma Collins?
I have.
Oh,
she's hilarious.
So much love for
she's
her.
She's exactly the same.
I think a bit of like Marmite. I think everyone I love is a little bit Marmite.
She is a character. And she's actually probably the only one in Towie I can bear, because I was around when they all started getting famous. And it's funny to watch people and they get a bit of fame and they become so intoxicated. And I remember there was this instance where we'd been making, at the Daily Star, we'd been making these people famous by writing about them.
Yeah.
We were the reason
they
were
becoming recognizable. So you were to blame for the success of all of the...
Well,
beautifully tanned and perfectly make-upped Towie stars.
I'm not taking the responsibility for all of it, but yeah, collectively we did that. And then we'd been interviewing him for months, and then I went up to Joey Essex at a party and I said, oh, Joey, you've got 5 minutes, because he was quite newsworthy. He was like, you'll have to speak to my agent, you're going to have to pay for this interview. I was like,
sorry,
excuse me? So I had my own column at the time, so the next day I wrote the story just that, oh, Joey Essex is... too big for his boots now. He thinks that he's this big star. He thinks he can charge for interviews at parties. So I tore him to shreds. I saw him the next week at the, I think it was the NTAs or the TV BAFTAs. He came up to me like, why did you write that about me, man? I don't understand. I was like, and now you know. And now these same Towie people, Joey included, will be the people at a party who are desperate for people to talk to them. Like, you're only hot
so
for
so funny,
long.
Isn't it? Yeah.
And now there's many journalists who they try and talk to, be like, no, the editor's not interested in you.
And I think as well, because they are so like, is it, what's the expression? Penny to a dozen. Is that what it is?
I'm ten sorry. A penny, yeah.
Ten. Forgive me. My colloquialisms. Ten a penny. They are so ten a penny, which is such an awful thing to say about human beings. But I mean more the, you know, that kind of culture breed of celebrity. Mm. I guess we used to call them what? Z-list celebrities or reality TV stars. They still are.
Because yeah. Then something like Love Island comes along and they're not interested anymore.
I did love... This is the thing. I mean, to be fair, of all of my reality TV fixes that I do get, Love Island was by far the best I've ever encountered. I've never seen it. Stop it.
Never.
And you call yourself a celeb journalist.
I'm quite proud of that, actually. No, but I was living in New York this year for 3 months and that was when it all happened. And I've never, in all my years, missed a big cultural moment in this country. But that one completely passed me by. So I came back and people talk about Kem. I'm like...
Who is he?
Are you talking about, like, Kem sex? I don't understand what's going on. And then... But it's this man. Man is a man.
Yeah, Kem, yeah.
I still don't know who he is. And people are obsessed. I mean, it went straight off my head.
I feel like you have missed out. I'm not going to lie to you. But I think you only missed out this summer. No. Yeah. Like, and I'd never watched Love Island before, and I don't think I ever will, to be honest.
Oh, do you think I watched the first season, like, a long time ago? Do you remember when it was...
No, see, I
Paul Dunan first, and Jane Middlemas won. So this was a long time ago.
I remember Paul Dunan.
Yeah, I think he was on this one as well. Oh, maybe in Celebrity Big Brother.
He wasn't going to Celebrity Big Brother.
No, he was in Love Island. I mean, he's done the rounds. Yeah. This is basically...
Because I didn't really even know what it was. Because I'm just... I like reality TV, but I don't like those type of shows where it's a game show and it's just basically skinny tanned people.
No, you want some variety. That's so why I used to like Big Brother. They yeah. Like loads
the
of
original
people.
Big Brother. And oh this, God, basically, so this good. Year's Love Island, I think, was like those first two series of Big Brother.
Okay, you sold
me
then.
It was raw. It was... And I feel like whoever produces the show, great job.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
You did a great bloody job. Well done. Bravo. But yeah, so like my kind of reality TV is way more like, I mean, love a bit of Kardashians. I know that I get a lot of shame. My friends all think it's ridiculous that I'm still obsessed with the Kardashians 10 years later. But I think
they've come full circle. Yeah. I think people... It was uncool to like them, and then I think it became so uncool it's cool again. And let's face it, they're not going anywhere.
I mean, they've been around for 10 years, and they've managed to turn nothing into a hell of a lot.
A hell of a lot of money, and a hell of a lot of
ass. A lot of silicone, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I interviewed Kim four years ago. So this was like, she was very famous, but she wasn't what she is now. Although yeah. She was with Kanye at this point.
I feel like she was famous then, but she wasn't a celebrity.
I think after she did the Break the Internet shoot, that's where it went to a yes, different level. And yeah. The wedding with Kanye.
Yeah, the wedding. I mean, Kanye was what made it for her.
Absolutely. But she was with him when I interviewed him, but I don't think they'd taken it as far yet. It was one of her fragrance launches, and I interviewed her, and she was so robotic. But I get why, because, I mean, she didn't really have to give an interview with me, and she wasn't going to give me anything interesting, because she didn't have to, and she's very... I think, like we were saying about Katie Price, I think she's very savvy. But whereas Katie's savvy in a way that she will let it all out there.
Yeah.
Kim is very, I will give my interesting quotes when I've got something interesting I really to need say. To promote.
Do you think, actually, that's a really interesting point that you make. Do you think that's to do with, like, UK celebrities versus American celebrities? Because I do generally find that I really enjoy celebrity in the UK, but I really don't care about anything in American culture in terms celebrity-wise. Like, I might enjoy a film, but it's not because of the lead star, unless it's Channing Tatum, and that's a whole different reason why I enjoy that.
That's what I'm like with Colin Farrell.
Colin Farrell?
Obsessed, yeah.
Really? Mm-hmm. Do you not think that he's just got too many teeth now?
No, I think he's got the perfect amount of teeth.
And I feel like he's the kind of guy that plays rugged, but he's probably not rugged at all. He's probably, like, really puny and, like...
I did see a picture of him wearing yoga pants. And then I was like,
Yeah.
It did make me rethink a few things. But, but yeah, he's sexy. And I interviewed him once on the red carpet, and he, like, made eye contact. And they very rarely do it. I was drooling. And he'd, like, touch your arm and stuff like that.
And Chante.
Some people... some celebrities are very good at making you feel...
like you're the only person in the room?
Yeah, like, people always say that about Simon Cowell, and it's true. And then there's some people
especially if you're a black woman, I'm sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Simon, look at me, I love me. I'm Sunita.
The new Sunita. But then there are others who you meet, and but you don't feel like you met them at all. So it's someone,
yeah,
someone
I think
like
that's
Matthew McConaughey. It's just like a shadow.
Don't tell me that I adore him.
Well, I think he's a great actor. But I mean, I think I met him at a very weird time in his life, because he was, I've said to my colleagues, well, peers on the red carpet, like, he's anorexic, there's something wrong with him.
He did lose a lot of weight.
But then later, Dallas Spies Club came out, I was like, oh, that's why. Because we were at a Magic Mike premiere.
I mean, you were just killing me right now. First is Matthew McConaughey, Magic Mike. I'm like, I can't control. How do you control yourself when you're around these people?
Because these premieres are not fun, and everyone always thinks they would be fun, but they're absolutely not, because you're stood outside for 3 to 4 hours sometimes.
Oh, God.
At red carpet, and they don't let you just come at the end when, and inevitably the big star of the film comes right at the end. And sometimes they come right at the end and don't even talk to you. So you've spent 4 hours stood, and guaranteed, if the premiere is in the winter, the red carpet will be outside, and if it's in the sweltering summer, it will be inside. So it will be.
Why do they do this?
To torture you, honestly. And then the celebrity will come up, and like Angelina Jolie will be like, oh my God, it's so cold. You're like, yeah, I know, I've been sitting for 4 fucking hours. You've just walked out of a limo and you're walking in to watch your probably shit film. So you get very annoyed, and you stood there. And then occasionally you interview someone else who's coming up, but the red carpet is kind of, and it sounds really ungrateful and shitty, but it is a horrible place to work. Most
that's
journalists
so funny,
hate it.
You all, as a like consumer of this juice, you always feel like the red carpet is where the glamour is. And I know we've got a friend in common, and I feel like she's always doing red carpets. And I'm always like, oh, back home to my spreadsheet.
Oh, well,
my bottle of cheap Pinot.
It's not fun. It really is. There are loads of things that are fun, so I'm not ungrateful. Like, I love when there's a like a press night for a West End show or something. I love that. And I love just like a really cool award show where all the stars are out and you can kind of, you're mingling with them over dinner. But a red carpet is not fun, and most showbiz journalists would not say it was fun.
And do you find that you make any friends? Like, not just red carpet friends as in colleagues, but do you ever make friends with any of the celebs? Or is it just friends on the red carpet as in journos?
So you become very good friends with your fellow journalists, because you soon realise, and I learnt this a little bit too late, but you will see each other at every single party. So some of the time you spend more time with journalists from other papers, your rivals, than you do with your actual colleagues at your own paper.
That's so funny.
So you get to know them really well. And then, because a lot of these parties have free drink, when I was first starting, I was
just
couldn't believe that there was free drink. I was like, oh my God. Any moment I wasn't drinking, I thought, I'm losing money. Like, I'm wasting. So I'd be hammered.
Money that wasn't mine.
And then just get into some stupid argument with someone at a party and just think, oh, well, never mind. And then 2 days later, you're at another party and they're there and you're like, oh shit, I can't fall out with people,
yeah.
Because, and then you realise after doing it for so long that it's quite a small pool of showbiz journalists in the grand scheme of things, and the people that you knew 2 years ago become the people giving you work in 2 years. They get promoted to be an editor, or like when I became an editor, and then I was giving work to my friends, and
I mean, that's a really good point actually, because for all of the different types of journalists that I know, I feel like what makes it something that I quite enjoy, sort of having like a toothpick stab at it is mm-hmm. how much of a community it is. Yeah, and I, my day job, my career has always been built around a really broad industry. And I mean, the fashion industry is tiny, and actually it's really not in comparison to a lot of others, because actually yeah. we're not friends.
Mm-hmm.
And I say there's very few people in the industry that are friends in yeah. the way that I feel journalists are. And I always find it so refreshing. And I was at a really incredible, completely, I mean, different type of journalism. I was at an event with Cosmopolitan magazine,
mm-hmm.
and there it was a panel event, quite intimate, maybe like 50 people there. And you could see between like the editor of the magazine and then some of the other journalists that were up on stage, there was a friendship there. Like there was a relationship between these people that have built their careers together. Mm-hmm. I can think of some of like the old commercial directors that I started working with. They probably wouldn't even recognise me. I mean, now I look like a little chubby boy. Well, I actually look like Crisscross today, which has terrified a lot of people in the office. Disaster with a overly straightened hair gone curly. thanks, babe. But yeah, there's not that camaraderie that you get when you're on the red carpet. And I always think of it as, well, I know it's not on the red carpet, it's not your whole job, but
yeah.
when I think of that pool of journalists that I sometimes see at different events,
mm-hmm.
And it's just so refreshing.
I don't know, I think there's... It is quite nice, but there's pros and cons to it, because I think, on the other hand, when you become friends with your fellow journalists, you're also still in an industry where you're naturally expected to be competitive. So if you're both at a party, say I'm there for the Sun and my friend who I've known for years is there for the Mirror, we're both having a nice time catching up, and then there's a celebrity and she goes in and gets the chat and I don't. Like there is, and then it does cause tension and there are fallouts. And sometimes you think, would it be easy if we just weren't friends? But it's actually very difficult
not to
go through and see the same people event after event and not be friends with them. So I think you just kind of have to take it on a case-by-case basis and accept that the girl that you're having drinks with and laughing with last week, this week you're telling to go fuck herself because you're at a party and things have got out of control. And then, but people have very short memories, I think, because of the free bar usually.
I mean, yeah, free bar.
So a lot gets wiped clean, I think.
So do you think as well that's kind of, I mean, I always think the greatest, and I know, I know I talk about him on every bloody podcast, but Piers Morgan, he is my total Marmite. And I think what I like about him is how he probes. And I think every single interview he ever does, he has literally zero fucks to give.
Yeah.
And I think that's what makes him really good. Like, he might not agree with what he's saying. I think virtually no one probably agrees with what he's saying. But he gets a conversation.
Sometimes he's right. Yeah.
He gets a conversation going that, to me, a lot of journalists don't, or a lot of people don't. And
yeah,
I think that's what makes the world go round. Imagine how boring life would be if we just listened to some people's opinion. I know he is opinionated, but it's that push and that ability for him to not be afraid of offending people or losing friends, basically. And I was reading a really interesting article about a book that I'm reading. So I'm reading The Originals at the moment by Adam Grant.
Mm-hmm.
And he's talking about those kind of people that are really entrepreneurial, like in any walk of life.
Yeah.
And one of their key traits is they're not afraid to lose friends. I always say, and it doesn't mean that those people aren't friendly and don't have loads of friends. It just means being liked and being friendly to everyone is not at the top of their agenda. It's about getting the job done. And I think I always struggle with that because I'd say I'm like sociable is probably one of my top skills, like top three skills. Friendly, one of my top three skills. But I always say I'm not nice. I mean, you're never going
to...
Thanks, babe. But, I mean, I feel like I'm just... I hope I'm being genuine a lot of the time. And I think that it's really... It must be really hard for a journalist who is trying to build that relationship with effectively a stranger, but then also build that relationship all the time with their effective... Like, I guess it's competition, but colleagues in a way.
Yeah, there is an element of, and I'm sure you know about this in the fashion industry as well, like a lot of people are very fake and like you've known them 2 minutes and like, oh my God, I love you. And it's like, we're getting along just fine, but yeah, we don't know each other. So I'm definitely not like that. I'm friendly to people when I meet them.
Yeah, no, I think that's why you stand out.
But I don't like that. And then I think when I do like someone and get on with them, it means more. Whereas if I'm just going around telling everyone I love them, then it's like, how do you know what my real feelings are? Yeah. Or whether we actually have made a connection, or whether I'm just... And there's a lot of that. There's people I've known for years in showbiz journalism who you're at a party with them and they're just constantly looking over their shoulder for the next person and, like, see who's better. And it's very, like, yeah, there's an element of kind of nauseating falseness to it all.
Cringiness.
Yeah. But then there's also, if you're quite direct, and like you say about Piers Morgan, who very much doesn't seem to give a shit what people think, that is also something a lot of people have respect for, because... You can't really be a journalist going around interviewing celebrities being like, oh, God, they're not saying anything interesting. They're just saying, oh, never say never, and giving non-answers. When you yourself are not being opinionated and being quite boring yourself, I think, yeah, ask the tough questions. Ask curveball questions. You don't have to follow a script. I've seen so many times on red carpets where it's usually a young female journalist who'd be like, oh, what are you wearing? It's like, no one cares.
I mean, as you can tell, I'm not good with a script. I've asked none of the fucking questions I had listed today.
But it's good to go off topic and, like, judge each interview as it develops. Like, some people are so obsessed with their next question that they actually might be missing the story. Because when a celebrity's goes off a tangent and they're trying to bring them back, and that's not the best thing to do. I think it's... Each interview is different. Sometimes it's good to build a rapport, make them feel really comfortable, so they'll loosen up. Other times you just need to do a Paxman and just say, are you doing Strictly? Are you doing Strictly? Are you doing Strictly? Until they eventually say,
I'm doing
why are you being so weird? You got something wrong with you.
Are you alright, love?
Someone didn't take their meds today.
So, I've got one more question that I want to ask you. And I just want to say, this has been a bloody delight. Can I just say,
I want to keep going.
You are definitely coming back, by the way.
Oh, yeah, we have to.
We need round two.
We do.
So
and four.
And five and six. What I find really interesting about your career, and I think one thing I'm always really interested, I'm one of these people... that is a real, like, stereotypical millennial. Like, all I care about is my job, my career. Well, not all, but that's, like, my number one goal in life. I'm one of those independent women that, like, is, like, career. And so I'm always really obsessed with how other successful people have built their careers. But for me, what makes that interesting is not this, like, so my dad's a millionaire, and I'm really lucky to be a trust fund kid, and I got this internship. So I got this internship, and now I'm like head of Vogue. It's like, no. I mean, some of us are literally doing the like 39p shop in Lidl for the last 2 weeks of the month, still at 32 years old. Still me. And I think there's something really admirable to people that are successful in the way that I see success, and I think success is really different to different people for different reasons.
Yeah.
And to me, success is setting out to build something for yourself. It doesn't necessarily have to be the career that you wanted or the path that you thought you were going to go down, but still creating something that is amazing and that other people can learn from or admire or look up to, even if you don't think it's that great because it wasn't what you intended.
Absolutely,
and really, really importantly, especially I think in today's society, have some kind of personal version of work-life balance.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean being able to go to the gym after work. It's like whatever that means for you. That might mean working, you know, a 50-hour week. That might be work-life balance for you.
Yeah.
And I know in your industry, I mean, you're literally working now all night, which for me is not what I'm used to. So... I would say that you are definitely somebody that's really successful, and I just want to say, how do you think that you have achieved that? Because you started from, this is such a cliche, so you started from humble beginnings, and you've done something really incredible, and you're still doing great things, and I think that move into freelancing is something that a lot of people our age are looking at and aspiring to make that leap, and it's terrifying. Like, well, it's really scary.
It is, but I think going off what you were saying before, you said you're a typical millennium, and I don't think you are, and I think you're a really good example of, like, you wanted to do a podcast, so you did it. And I think an issue that I think a lot of some people in our generation have, and younger especially, is I want a podcast. Like, why is no one offering me one? Why is I'm walking around being fabulous. Why is no one giving me one? It's like, in today's day and age, I think you do just have to, if you want something, you have to seize it yourself. And you've done this all by yourself. And there's always, and it's very gratifying and it's very inspiring. And I think that's the thing. And I'm quite old school, because when I came down to London first, and still now, because I've written a novel and I want to get it published, I'm not...
Let's make this happen, people.
I'm not expecting anyone to be offering me any book deals, but I've been to parties specifically to target one person. And I walk up to them and meet them and give them your business card. And I think if you're doing anything that's media related, you cannot underestimate the power of face to face. Like, you can send as many emails perfectly worded, covering letters as you want, but if you need to get FaceTime with someone. And if you really, and you can make it happen, like, and I just always think, do things that are really embarrassing and mortifying. Like,
the story of my life.
If you want to stand outside someone's office and wait for them and hand them a handwritten CV, then do it. Like, show that you are willing to be completely mortifying but dedicated. And yeah, when I came down to London originally, I just kind of wasn't sat around waiting for job applications to come up. I just thought, right, how, watch what people were doing and how can I be like them? How can I make it happen for me? And I think if you have that attitude, eventually it will happen.
Do you know, that's actually really sound advice, and it's annoyingly the kind of thing that my mum would say to me. Thanks, Ed.
But it worked because you are doing it.
But I think the good learning from that is, actually, we always say that, like, things are different. Things are so much harder now. You don't just get given stuff nowadays. You didn't get given stuff, you know, 10, 20, 30 years ago. People were just, like, it more social. And that doesn't mean online, Instagram. Bloody love Instagram. But it's maybe not always going to give you the job that you want or the satisfaction that you need. It's more about, like, getting out and meeting people. I mean, and I still totally cringe when I have to go and introduce myself to somebody for the first time. Even if I know that they might know who I am, I'm always really freaked out. So that was bloody brilliant advice.
Well, you don't give off that vibe. You give off a very confident vibe. And that is another good tip, I think, is just fake it till you make it, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Just project.
And if you can't fake it on your own, it's called one glass of Merlot and then you fake it till you make it.
Fake it on your own sounds like a bit weird.
Well, that's a whole nother podcast.
That is.
That one's X-rated.
Coming soon. Oh, we're going to be in the middle of that.
Right, Ed, on that note, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been amazing.
For sure. Be back.
I definitely will. Thanks. I can't wait already.
And if you've enjoyed what you listened to today or any other of my podcasts, you can find me on acast.com. I'm available on iTunes and on Android or wherever it is that you listen to your podcasts. And if you'd like to join the conversation, you can tweet me at Teb Moema. That's T-E-B, as in T for Tango, E for Echo, B for Bravo. Yes, I do have to spell my name out like that. Moema, which is M-O-E-M-A. Or you can find me on Instagram at Teb1. Thanks so much, guys. Bye.
Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.